Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book titled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 133. I'm recording it on Friday, May 1st, 2009. The PE 10 level today is 15. That's fair value. Stocks purchased at today's prices offer a strong long-term value proposition. The music for the podcast is by Kevin McLeod at Incompetech.com. The name of the selection is Cambodian Odyssey. The title of the podcast is The Flat Earth Society Still Believes in Passive Investing. I am a big believer in getting the fundamentals right. There's a rule that a lot of people use, a lot of smart people, they call it the 80-20 rule. And the 80-20 rule says 80% of the results you get out of all sorts of life endeavors come from 20% of the work you put in. And the key is figuring out what the important 20% is and putting your efforts in that direction. And you'll get a big payoff. And we spend a lot of our time fussing and fretting over all sorts of details that don't really amount to all that much. But we just get caught up in it. It's human nature. We get caught up in it and we just keep doing that same old thing. But what we really need to do to succeed as human beings is take a step back sometimes and say, what am I doing that really matters? And get that right. And that's how successful people become successful, I believe. And there are a good number of people who have said similar things. And the question that regarding investing that is explored all the time at PassionSaving.com in the articles and the calculators and the podcast is, it's the 80% question, the question that determines 80% of your results, but that takes only 20% of the effort. And that is, do valuations affect long-term returns? Because if valuations affect long-term returns, you're going to go down one path, the rational investing path. You're never even going to imagine the idea of sticking with the same stock allocation. When prices change dramatically, that'll be out of your consciousness, because if valuations affect long-term returns, obviously you need to adjust your stock allocation to keep your risk level roughly constant. Or going to choose the passive investing route, and you're going to say, no, I'll be one of those people that stays with the same stock allocation at all times. And I believe that if you choose the wrong path on that one, leave aside the question of which is right and which is wrong. I obviously believe rational is right and passive is wrong. That question is going to determine whether your investing plan is successful in the long run or not, I believe. It's probably 80% of the 80% factor on whether you're going to be successful or not. But it only takes a small amount of effort to figure out which of those two paths is correct. But of course, you do need to put that effort in, and many are reluctant to do that. Many are reluctant to do that, and they want to stick with the decision they made at an earlier time. If once upon a time they heard that passive is right and they went along with that, they become glued to that, and they don't want to change, and they continue year after year after year to see bad results from their investing strategies, but they don't want to change. They don't want to accept that. And the purpose of this podcast, all of them are really like that. All of the work I do is to focus on that question. Should you go passive? Should you go rational? And, I just feel that that's where I can make a contribution. There's lots of material out there on all the details. And I sometimes pull that in as part of the discussion. But where I feel I can do the most good is making the case to the average middle-class investor as to why you want to abandon passive investing, discredit it strategy that's still the dominant model of today, and take up rational investing, the model explored at my website. the model that says you must not only may timing work, but you must time the market to have any hope of long-term success. You must lower your stock allocation at times of insanely high prices, and you must increase your stock allocation at times of insanely low prices. So I'm always trying to address that basic question, but this particular podcast, I'm going to try to get even more basic than usual. I'm going to try to really, really just get down to the core of it. And the title I woke up this morning in my head, The Flat Earth Society Still Believes in Passive Investing. And what that is intended to convey is, well, it may sound like I'm ridiculing the passive investors, and I am, you know, not in a mean-spirited way, I hope. I'm teasing, you know, I'm teasing, and I don't mean it to be mean-spirited. But I do want to make the point that to believe in passive investing in the year, you know, it's now May of 2009, to believe in passive investing in May of 2009, I do believe it's fair to say, from my perspective, not from yours, but from my perspective, is equivalent to being a member of the Flat Earth Society. That's how preposterous the passive investing claims are, as of today. Now, if this is the first podcast you're listening to, I'm sure you don't feel that way about it. I'm certain of it. Most people have heard so many arguments that passive investing is right. They think it must be true. And, you know, they're gonna have a hard time swallowing that I'm saying believing in passive investing is equivalent to believing in a flat earth. But I really think it's so. I didn't know this until I explored, you know, the record. But having explored it, I've come to that conclusion. And so what I'm trying to say is there is no reason to believe in passive investing except one. And that one reason is everybody else believes in it. That's where we are. There is no reason today to believe in passive investing. There's no logical case for it. I've explored that in great depth. You know, I've participated in thousands upon thousands upon thousands of discussions with thousands of my, you know, fellow middle-class investors and with experts. And no one in 7 years has ever been able to come up with a logical argument for passive investing that stands up to scrutiny. I've explored the historical data going all the way back to 1870, have never been able to find any indication in the historical data that passive investing makes sense. And I've checked a lot of the statements of big name experts, and I've got a mountain of statements by big name experts and informed middle class investors who endorse the principles of rational investing. Many of them will not personally acknowledge that passive investing has failed. That's a small number that will do that. There are some, but that's a relatively small number. But many of the people who advocate passive investing themselves acknowledge, implicitly at least, the inconsistencies in the passive investing model. So there is no reason to believe in this model. There is no intellectual case. But there's one thing it has going for it, and that's that millions believe in it. Millions believe in it. Millions invest according to it. Those are facts, and I don't dispute those facts. Millions believe in it. If that's all that matters to you, what the majority believes, then you should be a passive investor, because the majority today, there's no question, believes that timing the market is impossible, that stocks are always best for the long run. The majority believes that today. These are the principles of passive investing. That buy and hold is the way to go, all these sorts of things. That you should stay with the same stock allocation regardless of how insane prices get. All these things are passive investing concepts, and they're less popular today than they were before the stock crash, but they are still clearly the dominant model. Passive investing remains the dominant model. So if what matters to you is what do most people believe, then you should be a passive investor. But if you believe that your investing strategy has to be logical or rational or sensible or realistic, then I am not able to come up with any reason why you should be a passive investor. You can talk to other people, and they will tell you that there are good reasons. There are many, many people who will say that, but I can just tell you what I know, what I see, and I see nothing. I see nothing. It amazes me. It astounds me that that's so. I was a passive investor myself once upon a time. It astounds me to be able to say that all of these very smart people endorse passive investing. And yet there's no argument for it. You know, how do you square that one? Well, that's sort of the purpose of this podcast, is to explain to you how it can be squared, and perhaps by squaring it, get you to reconsider. If you have a strong belief that there must be something to this passive investing idea, just because so many smart people believe in it, maybe by showing you how it's possible that that's not the case, maybe that will cause you to entertain a little bit of doubt. And if you entertain a little bit of doubt, I think we'll be on our way. Once you entertain a little bit of doubt, you'll start allowing different ideas into your head. And once you allow those different ideas into your head, they're going to grow. They'll be seeds and they will grow. And that's what happened with me. I started out entertaining little doubts, and those doubts grew bigger and bigger and bigger. And 7 years later, I stand before you. I don't want to say 100% persuaded passive investing cannot work, because I don't think any of us can know anything with 100% certainty. But with strong confidence, very strong confidence, that passive investing cannot work. And if passive investing cannot work, that means just about everything you've learned about stock investing over the past 30 years is wrong. So it's a big story. It's not a little story. Now, the reason I bring in the Flat Earth Society, I don't know hardly anything about the Flat Earth Society. It's a phrase you hear from time to time. People will say, oh, you know, if somebody doesn't accept some sort of scientific finding that appears to be rock solid, people will say, oh, you must be a member of the Flat Earth Society. I looked up Flat Earth Society on Google. I looked at the Wikipedia item and write up, and I didn't spend a lot of time on it, but it appears from reading the Wikipedia item that there's still a Flat Earth Society to this day, not terribly active. They described it as having 3,000 members not all that long ago. It sounded like it was fewer today. The leader died or something, and they said the Flat Earth Society was just about out of business, and then the internet gave it some new life because people can contact each other through the internet. So it's still around. But not a terribly powerful force in the world, but still exists. Now, but the first sentence of the Wikipedia item, or at least the first paragraph, was up near the top. It said, let me see if I have this written down somewhere, what the year was. I don't know. I thought I had written it down, but it didn't seem to appear here. But it said that the belief in... That annoys me. When you know you've written something down and you can't find where you write it, is that not annoying? I know that it said somewhere that I don't recall exactly the year. It was 400 BC or 500 BC. Up until whatever it was, 400 BC, let's say, belief in a flat earth, it said, was virtually universal. In other words, everybody believed in a flat earth. It wasn't a quirky belief or a strange belief. Everyone believed in it. Now, see, that's what we've got with passive investing. Why did everyone believe in a flat earth? Why did everyone believe in a flat earth once upon a time? Virtually. I mean, as they say, it's virtually unanimous. Largely because everyone else did. In other words, all the people who believed in a flat earth, it wasn't that they went out and checked. You know, all the millions of people that were on planet Earth, they didn't go out and check themselves and say, is the Earth flat? Let me see. Let me be an explorer. Let me, you know, go on a ship and, you know, sail to the edge of the Earth and see if I fall off. They didn't do that. Their parents told them that there was a flat Earth, and their brothers and sisters told them, and their friends and neighbors. And they said, all these people tell me it's flat Earth. They're all smart people. It must be right. And some crackpot went off and said, maybe it's not flat. Let me find out. And he came back and said, yeah, you know what? turns out it's not flat. And I'll bet you any amount of money, I wasn't there, but I'll bet you any amount of money the guy got a lot of grief. One quote, I don't believe in the flat earth theory. My friends in the at the Goon Central board will be pleased to learn. But I did read one quote from the, I think this was from the leader of the Flat Earth Society. It was in the Wikipedia item from his newsletter. And I like this quote. He said, I mean, it made me feel a little sympathy for this Flat Earth group. I'm not going to sign up, but this quote I liked. He said, all inventions, this is a quote from the leader of the Flat Earth Society, all inventions have been anti-science. The Wright brothers said, and here he quotes the Wright brothers, science held us up for years. Science theory held us up for years. I ought to write more clearly so I could read my writing. Science theory held us up for years. When we threw out the science, we started from experimentation and experience. Then we invented the airplane. Now, the point here was, presuming the quote is accurate, and I presume it is, the Wright brothers invented the airplane. It's pretty darn exciting discovery. And he's saying they were trying to invent the airplane for some time, and they started out by studying science, and science told them it can't be done. And that held them back. And it sounds from the sound of the quote, it sounds like they were trying to overcome the idea that it couldn't be done. But they were starting with the scientific grounding. I don't know the story of the Wright brothers in any detail, but it sounds like they were trying to use science and build on it and figure out a way to make an airplane that flew. But the science was wrong in parts, and that was leading them astray. It was causing them not to look at reality, and looking at reality, when they started looking at reality, when they started looking at what was in front of their eyes, their own personal experience, which is a form of science. All science comes from seeing things play out before you and testing, personal testing. So that's a form of science, but it's not a form of science that's written up in the books at the time you do it. Once they started looking at their own experience and applying their own common sense to what they saw before them, they started to make real progress in building an airplane. So the guy from the Flat Earth Society is quoting this. He's saying, well, look, just because all these scientists say we're wrong doesn't mean we're wrong. As I say, look, do I know that the Earth is round? I don't really know it as a fact. I've never gone out and tested it myself, just like everybody else, I presume. All of these smart people couldn't possibly be wrong that the Earth is round. It's just not possible. What I'm trying to do here, I'm not going to argue that the Earth is flat, but I am trying to argue that we should, as a general practice, try not to be so sure of ourselves. This is just a human failing. We were so sure that the Earth was flat. I have no doubt in my mind that we could have learned that the Earth was round many years earlier than we did if only we had more open minds. And we could have learned to fly many years earlier than we did if we had only had open minds. But there's something in human nature, I think it's fear. We want to know things. We want to be sure. We want the world to be dependable. And so we latch on to theories that seem to make sense, that seem to add up. We latch on to these theories and we say, that's it. I got it. And then you close the door and you don't want to let anything in at that point. And of course, to some extent, this is a survival mechanism. To some extent, it's a good thing. If we were to re-examine every assumption of human life every day, we couldn't get out of bed in the morning. You know, you're afraid to get out of bed. I mean, you're going to re-examine gravity every day you wake up. You don't know whether your feet are going to land on the floor. You're going to, you know, float off into space. We have to take certain things on faith, more or less, just to get through the day. But it's a mistake to take too many things on faith. And it's a mistake for the real point is it's a mistake for the faith to become too dogmatic. We have to leave open a little door of doubt and questioning, because that's the only way we can ever learn new things. And I believe that most people who believe in the passive model today sincerely believe in it. I should say I believe most people who say they believe in it sincerely believe in it. I believe that many people today have doubts, and they don't express the doubts to the extent they feel them. I don't know so much about middle class. I think that's true of middle class investors. I've spoken to thousands, you know, and many have doubts. You know, I've had people say this to me. They say, "Rob, you articulate some doubts that I've had for a long time and have never given voice to." And that, you know, that excites me when I hear that, because that's my job. And I've had people say that. I've had numerous people say that. So there are a lot of people out there that have doubts, but the middle class investors who have doubts are very tentative. They're generally intimidated by experts, and they don't feel that just because they have doubts, they don't put too much credence in them. But the experts also have doubts. The experts I hold to a higher standard, and I believe the experts should be articulating these doubts. They should be coming forward. This is my biggest gripe. You can hear my voice pick up as I start to talk about it. I believe that the tragedy of all this is if the experts had come forward when they first began to entertain doubts, none of this would have happened. And the problem is, it's not a light switch event. It's a funny thing. Whether you believe in passive investing or rational, passive is the model that says you don't have to change your allocation. Rational is the model that says you must. Whether you believe or not is an either or. You can't believe. It doesn't make sense to say I half believe in one and I half believe in the other. It's such a fundamental question. It's like saying, I'm trying to think of something where you can't go halfway. Can you drive a car over a cliff? Is that safe? You know, some people might say, well, I believe the cars can fly. If you go over a cliff, the car will just fly in space like an airplane and no problem. And others would say, no. If you drive over a cliff, you're gonna crash below and you're gonna die. So you can't say, well, I have a third view. I believe the cars sort of kind of fly, but not really. And I'll, you know, that doesn't make any sense. If you believe the cars can fly, well, by all means, drive over a cliff. And if you're right, you got no problem. You'll just fly. You're in a plane, no problem. People fly in planes all the time, perfectly safe. If you believe that cars cannot fly, you certainly should not go over a cliff. No way, no how. But there is no middle ground. You know, one of those positions is right and one is wrong. There is no middle ground. To say, I kind of sort of think you can drive over a cliff, but I kind of sort of don't, it's not even, that position is wrong, but not only is it wrong, it's illogical. It just doesn't make any sense. Well, to say you believe in rational investing, I believe is correct. I believe it's true. To say you believe in passive investing, I believe is false, but it is logical. There is a logical theory behind the passive investing model. It all fits logically. The logic chain is very strong. So to believe in passive investing is, I sometimes say it's irrational. It's irrational, but it's not illogical. It's irrational because the fundamental premise does not make sense. But it's not illogical. If you buy into the initial premise that the valuations do not affect long-term returns, all the rest fits. All the rest fits perfectly. But it doesn't make any sense at all. There's not even any logic to the idea that you're a middle ground. You know, the market might be sort of you know, passive might sort of work and rational might sort of work. That doesn't even make sense. So one of the big problems, I think it's probably maybe the single biggest problem we have, is that there is no middle ground here. If passive is dominant at the time, and I believe that free speech argues that we should allow those who do not believe in passive to have the same rights to post on the internet as anyone else. they should be able to go to boards where most people are going to believe in passive, because that is the dominant model, and they should be able to point out the flaws in the dominant model. And if people want to believe what they believe, fine. If people want to continue to believe passive, fine. But people should have a right to hear both points of view and to express both points of view. But there are, and many, I think most agree with that, but there are a group of passive dogmatics who hates that idea. And part of the reason why they hate it is there is no middle ground. If passive is effectively challenged, passive falls. Passive can't survive halfway. So there's a drama being played out here. It's a strange sort of drama where one of these two models is going to prevail. They're not going to coexist. I believe that we should allow them to coexist, that, you know, we should show respect and affection for people with the other point of view, and we should live together in peace. However, I also believe that if we get to a point where the two models are able to coexist, that will ultimately mean the death of passive investing. I have to say that in frankness. I could be wrong. I'm not God. If the passives want to say, no, we believe that we can coexist and we believe we will prevail in the end, well, that's fine. They're allowed to think that as much as I think the other. But I cannot in honesty say that I believe the two could coexist and that passive could prevail. I personally don't see how that could ever happen. Because as I say, I just don't think there's any case for it. So we're in this strange position where we have two models that are opposite models, and they can't really coexist. So there is no middle ground. We either have to totally dump passive investing, or, I mean, if the passives would allow them to coexist, we could sort of transition from one to the other. But the passive dogmatics are not willing. We've seen that for 7 years. The passive dogmatics feel either you will totally overturn us or we'll never allow discussion. You know, we're just going to, you know, engage in such abusiveness that it just, you know, will destroy any board or any blog that permits discussion. That's the attitude of the dogmatics. So you've sort of got this position where the only way there can be any discussion of the failings of passive investing is if passive investing is totally overturned. But of course, it's catch 22, because how can it be overturned if there's never any discussion of the failings? So that, you know, when you look at it that way, it sounds sort of dark and dismal. You know, how are we ever going to overcome this? The other side, there's always another side to the story. The other side of the story is rational investing helps every single person alive in the United States. There's not one person hurt by learning how to invest effectively. That's our strong point. That's our trump card. And I have to believe that in time, that reality is going to prevail. And that if we cannot overturn passive entirely, we will at least get to a point where we can coexist. And if we ever get to a point where we coexist, then it will be sort of a fair fight. Both sides will make their arguments. People will decide for themselves. And I think rational will prevail in the long run. So it's a funny sort of debate. Sort of a debate that, it's always a debate about having a debate. We never actually have a debate on the merits of passive, because I think the passives can't tolerate a debate on the merits of passive. Once the focus becomes the merits of passive fails. So what the passives try to do is back it up one step and turn it into a debate about whether we should have a debate. And as long as they can debate whether to have a debate or not, they can use the fact that they've got the numbers. They've got the numbers. They don't have the logic, but they've got the numbers. They can use that fact to hold off the day of reckoning. But if they ever lose the debate about having a debate, if the financial suffering caused by passive investing gets so great that that big group in the middle that would be perfectly happy to have the debate, that is not so dogmatic, speaks up and says, hey, you know, we want to hear both sides, then I think, you know, passive is on its way out. But my point here, the point of the podcast is to take a big picture view of all this and just examine, you know, have there been other times in history when everybody believes something and then it turned out either to be false or at least came to be perceived to be false? And you can think of many cases of this. The pace of change in our society is very rapid today. Certainly, there was a change. There was a time when, as I say, there was a time when people didn't believe in airplanes. You know, I mean, you always hear they laughed at the Wright brothers. Now, does the fact that they laughed at them prove that they were wrong? Obviously, it not. There was a time when people said we will never go to the moon. They were wrong. There was certainly a time when people said we will never have a black president in the United States. Well, they were wrong. There was certainly a time when people said, there would never be a woman who would run for a high political office. They certainly were wrong. There was a time when people said there could never be a woman doctor or a woman lawyer. They were wrong. So many things. So many things. And yet, no matter how many times it happens, there's something in us that just rejects the new and just says, no, I want to stick to that old thinking. I don't want to re-explore. And so that's frustrating, but it's the way it is. And we sort of have to, we have to acknowledge the way it is and we have to work from there. But I want to explore a little bit, why is it, I think what most people, one of the things that shocked me just recently, I think I've mentioned it before, but I want to mention it again because it just, these things, certain things really stick in my mind. And I've been arguing with these goons. The goons are the abusive posters who invaded the retire early boards and the indexing boards and had the site owners impose bans on honest posting on safe withdrawal rates and other important investing questions at those boards. And lately I've been posting guest blog entries at various blogs. And that's gone pretty well. Most blog owners are willing to run blog entries. And all of the blog entries are arguing against passive investing, some aspect of the question. And more than 50% have agreed to run them. It's been a pretty high batting average. So on that, that's been encouraging news. Now, the goons have invaded many of these blogs with abusive posting, and the record of the site owners taking effective action against the goons has not been nearly as good. There have been some who have done it. There have some who have just said, look, just, don't post here anymore if you can't post constructively. That's happened on several occasions, but not across the board. Some have done that and some have not. And several have just taken the discussion threads down, which is a horrible result. Then the entire community loses access to these great threads where all these people are, all these people posting constructively or sharing their thoughts, and all those thoughts are being deleted. So that's sort of maddening when you see that. That has happened in a few cases. And in a few cases, the site owners have chastised or banned the abusive posters, but in most cases, they just sort of let it go up and they don't do anything. That's the most common scenario. But I was just amazed and astounded. I went to there's a discussion board for personal finance blog owners called Money Blog Network. And I had two long threads there. One was on the flaws in the conventional investing advice. Great thread. Lots of great questions. Great all the way around. And then there was a thread on where I said, we need protection from goon posters, where I was arguing that blog owners should unite and help other blog owners when they're under attack by these goons, whether they're goons dealing with passive investing or any other subject. Just in general, we should unite. But of course, my interest is the passive investing question, but the idea was to help all blog owners. We all, a great place for blog owners to unite would be at a forum where they all congregate. So it makes perfect sense. Now, that thread was not as good. That thread was contentious, but it had good points to it. There were points in it where people were raising legitimate questions. So I think there was value in it. Both of those threads were ultimately taken down. Strange. Now, and I always want to be able, when I can, I like to be able to say something in favor of the goons, because I don't approve of the behavior of the goons. But there are some things you can say in their behalf, and I think when there's something comes up, fairness compels me. And something I will say, at the first thread, the goons did invade. I believe it was Drip Guy, and he put up two abusive posts. And then one of the site owners took the entire thread down. Now, the fault there was a little bit with Drip Guy. I don't know for certain it was Drip Guy, but it appeared to be. The fault was certainly with him, but more fault was due to that site owner because there was no need for him to take the whole thread down. He could have deleted the two abusive posts and left, you know, the other 30, 40 posts up. So I put more blame on him. In the second thread, though, there were no evidence of goons whatsoever. None. The goons were not present on that thread. It was owners of blogs engaging in abusive posting. And it's just amazing. It's just amazing. What would possess them to do this? And I'm flabbergasted by it. It's my job to figure out what's going on, and so I have to try, but boy, it's not easy. They are not goons. These are good people. They have good blogs. There's something going on. Now, I think what's going on is, how can I put it? You know, there are clues. You do get clues. One of the clues that comes, one of the things they'll say, one of the things that several of them said is, they said, Rob, you sound like you're insane. That wasn't just one. There were two or three people said that. Now, I don't know what that means. I certainly don't sound insane in the comments I put forward. I respond to all their questions. But I think that part of what is going on is they look at this question of this guy, Rob Bennett, you know, he's got a blog, he's got a site, he's some guy who posts on the internet, and he's saying that all of the investing advice of the past 30 years is wrong. I think that's what they mean when they say you sound like you're insane. And he's, of course, saying on top of it, there's a group of organized goons who follows him everywhere on the internet and, destroys threads or destroys boards or burns them to the ground and all this sort of thing. Now, it's all true, but does it sound insane? It does sound insane. Sometimes I'm telling people, just friends of mine, and I stop myself and I say, I know this sounds insane, you know, but here goes, you know. You have to tell the story the way it happened. Is that what they mean when they say I sound insane? They're never willing to say. They're never willing to say. If you ask, you won't get an answer. But to the extent that they're sincere, you know, to some extent, they might have some other motive for wanting to shut the thing down, and they just say that because that's it's just a tactic. But I think there might be some grain of truth that some feel like this is just too much to swallow. It's too much. And they don't want to take the time to explore it. They don't want to take the time to verify it. So the reaction is just to say, well, let's declare it insane and go back to ordinary business. You know, I think that's part of it. So I think to some extent that's true on the boards. When these things are being discussed, there's this guy, Jim, who once said a version of that to me at the Vanguard Diehards, and he said, Rob, if you were just saying that prices are sort of high and, you know, maybe returns aren't going to be quite as good for the next couple of years, I could go along with that. I've heard other people say that, but you're not saying that. You're saying the whole model is flawed. He said, I can't buy that, you know. You know something that all these big people don't know? No, I can't. I think that's a version of the you sound insane theory. It's so big. Now, I can't help it that it's big, can I? You know, I mean, the Wright brothers couldn't help it that flying was a big advance. There's not a thing they could do about it. The guy who discovered that the Earth is not flat couldn't help it that that was a big advance in our understanding of the world. It is what it is. I didn't start out trying to come up with anything big. All I tried to come up with was showing that the safe withdrawal rate studies are wrong. And it's only by proving that point that I discovered that the entire passive investing model is wrong. So I didn't go into this with any ambition. Quite the contrary. I didn't want to become an investing writer. God help us all. I wanted to write about saving. And this fellow was destroying the board that I built to do that. We had thousands of people, and he's destroying it with these investing claims. And I had to show that they were fallacious so that he would stop doing it. But one thing led to another. So I guess what I'm trying to say is one of the things that makes it hard, if you're thinking inside your head and you're saying, well, the idea that prices would matter sure makes sense. However, it's impossible that Rob is right. One of the things you might think about is, have there been other times in human history when large numbers of people were wrong about something, and they were wrong about something big? Yes, there have been lots of them, you know, tons of them. Everybody was wrong about the Earth being flat. Everybody was wrong about man being able to fly. Everybody was wrong about man getting to the moon. Everybody was wrong about whether a black could ever be president. Everybody is wrong all the time. That's throughout history. I mean, I give you four or five examples. I could give you 1,000 if I spent time to go through the history books. You know, everybody is wrong about certain battles. You know, you go back through Civil War history, and everybody would say this side was going to win the battle, and the other side ended up winning. Same thing in World War II. Everybody knew that, you know, Hitler couldn't take over, you know, such and such country. Everybody knew it. But he did it. Maybe he, you know, he was crazy. But, you know, maybe sometimes being crazy is a good thing. You don't know what you can't do. Large numbers of people can be wrong about important things. You've got to. Yeah, that's the point I'm trying to make here, that when I say the Flat Earth Society still believes in passive investing, the Flat Earth Society is always going to believe in passive investing, because the Flat Earth Society is a group of people that just believes what they believe, and they don't care about the evidence. Now, as I say, there's a part of me, when I read that little bit of Wikipedia, I actually felt a tiny bit of sympathy for the Flat Earth Society. I don't believe they're right. But I do believe it's a little bit healthy that we have a Flat Earth Society. I think it's good that there be some little group out there that questions the conventional wisdom on whether the Earth is flat or round, because that keeps the rest of us honest. That's good. I believe that's good. I would never get angry at somebody for being in the Flat Earth Society. I wouldn't agree, but I just say, hey, you're entitled to your opinion. Interesting. Thanks for putting it forward, and go on. And if they ever made some great argument, I'd listen to it. But, you know, I fully understand why people don't believe in the Flat Earth Society. And I, to some extent, I understand why people believe passive investing can't be as wrong as I say it is. Because it's hard to swallow. You've got to swallow the whole thing all at once. Or at least that's what people think. They think, I have to swallow this huge change in how stock investing works all at once. It's like trying to, you know, swallow a mountain. But you don't have to swallow it all at once, or you shouldn't have to. I didn't swallow it all at once. I did it piece by piece by piece. And that's the way I advise you to try to tackle this. Look at some small issue. Don't try to swallow it all at once. Look at some small issue and check it out. Don't go by what the experts say. Check it out yourself. Check it out yourself. And if you satisfy yourself on that one issue, that the experts are wrong or that the conventional advice is wrong, well, if you satisfy yourself they were wrong on one thing, then that's going to start wheels turning in your head, and you're going to say, maybe they're wrong on some other things. That's the way it worked with me. You see, it all started with safe withdrawal rates. And when I first put forward that post, I can remember to this day, the morning I put it forward, I was nervous. I knew Grainy was going to come after me. I had no doubt about it. And I just felt that, you know, what would happen is I was sure that I was right logically. I didn't know the numbers, but I was sure I was right logically. And I said, what'll happen is the community will look into the numbers. And once they look into the numbers and the numbers back me up, Grainy will drop it. Everything will be fine. And from that point forward, everything will be great. And in the off chance that the numbers back Grainy up, well, then I would admit I was wrong, and that would be the end of it. You know, I don't have any problem if I'm wrong saying so. But I wanted somebody to look at the numbers, and I didn't want them to look at the numbers the way Grainy did, which is analytically invalid. I wanted somebody to look at the numbers using an analytically valid methodology. That's what I wanted. And we got that. John Walter Russell did it. But lots and lots of people refused to accept what the numbers said. And that stunned and amazed me. And we're still feeling the reverberations of that today. And that's where you get into the whole question of how emotional stock investing really is. And it's because it's emotional that people can't accept that passive investing is wrong. That people cling to it out of fear. Even though the numbers show it doesn't add up. So it's, you know, it is a catch-22. The only reason we can't give up passive investing is because we're so emotional, and passive investing is the model that says we're not emotional at all. So we can't admit that we're emotional because we believe we're not emotional, but the only reason we believe we're not emotional is because we are emotional. It just goes round and round and round. So you gotta take a little piece. You gotta have confidence in something. You can't. If you take a little piece and you're sure that you're right, that'll give you the courage to bite off another piece. Something that helped me when I was going to put up that post the morning. I believe it was a Monday morning. It was May 13th, so it was around this time of year, spring. And what I did, I had to work up my courage to click the submit button. And I went on to FireCalc. FireCalc is a calculator by Bill Scholler. If you enter FireCalc into Google, I think you'll find it. It's at the Early Retirement Forum. And I believe that Scholler has added some things to the calculator since, but in the old days, all it really was a calculator that took the grainy safe withdrawal rate study and reduced it to calculator form, which was a good thing to do. And it's a very popular calculator. The numbers are wrong. It's an old school calculator, but still a powerful tool. And what I did was, you know, the old school studies say that a 4% withdrawal rate always works, and above that does not. So what I did was I entered in, you know, a scenario where a retiree was taking a 5% withdrawal. So I wanted to generate some failed retirements. And of course I did. And then when I generated the failed retirements, I went back and I checked, was the first year in this failed retirement a time of high valuation or moderate valuation or low valuation? And in every single case, it was high valuation. Now, that cannot be coincidence. That tells us that valuations affect long-term returns, that your odds of having a failed retirement are greater at times of high valuation, if you retire at a time of high valuation. I don't see what other conclusion you can come to. And you can go to that calculator and do it yourself. And I, you know, you can't say Rob Bennett's, doctoring it. I can't affect what comes out in that calculator. So try it. It's Bill Scholler's calculator, based on John Graney's study. So try it yourself. But if all the failed retirements come out, have starting years where the valuations are high, I don't see how you can avoid the logical conclusion that valuations affect long-term returns. It's because long-term returns are so low, starting from years of high valuation, that all the failed retirements turn up in time periods in which the first year of the retirement is a high valuation year. I mean, that alone proves it, in my mind. You know, you always want further proofs, but that itself proves the essential point. And once you know that valuations affect long-term returns, you know there's no way on God's green earth that the safe withdrawal rate could be a constant number. No way. It's got to change. And then all that's left at that point is to do the math. You have to do a regression analysis to see how much it changes, and then you've got an accurate safe withdrawal rate. And that's what we do with the Retirement Risk Evaluator, the calculator at my website and John Walter Russell's website. But something simple like that, you see, if you do that yourself, instead of listening to my words, it will persuade you in a way that listening to my words won't. And once you let that into your head that, well, this doesn't sound, the results I'm seeing are not what I would expect to see, based on what passive investing tells me, you'll start to entertain doubts, and those doubts will grow. And then over time, you'll develop this thing I call X-ray vision. You'll start looking at everything you see through a different perspective, through a different filter. And instead of filtering out all the things that show that valuations matter, which is what passive investors do, you'll be filtering out all the things that say valuations don't matter. And you'll soon be walking a totally different path. But you have to start somewhere. You have to have confidence in that, you know, in that wedge. You know, you're trying to bust through all the conventional thinking. You're trying to bust through it. And to bust through it, you have to have confidence, because what they're doing is, not intentionally, but what they're doing is they keep repeating this message over and over and over again, and it causes you to lack confidence. You're feeling, well, who am I to go up against all these big shots? Who am I to go up against, you know, all this? But what if you have confidence in that one thing you believe in, then you can go up against it. But you got to have confidence. And so you got to start small. You got to start with one, you know, one micro issue instead of trying to swallow the whole thing in one swallow. Now, I'll mention a few things of that nature that, you know, simple tests that you can apply to help yourself believe that what's going on here is the passive investors, they're essentially the Flat Earth Society. They believe, the Flat Earthers believe, you know, they believe what they're saying. They're not lying. Why would they go to the trouble to create websites and all this sort of thing, newsletters, if they didn't believe it? People can believe just about anything. So the fact that lots of people believe in passive investing does not mean it's true. So here are a few simple tests. One, this is so simple. I mean, it's frightening. But what? Ask yourself this question. What does overvaluation, what does the word overvaluation mean? I don't know how more simple you could get. But here's the part that kills me. I'll have discussions with people who believe in passive investing, and they will use the word overvaluation all the time. They'll say, oh yeah, you know, stocks are overvalued today, and you know, blah, 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 blah. If you believe in passive investing, the concept of overvaluation is absurd. There can't be overvaluation. The passive investing model is rooted in the efficient market theory, which says the market always sets the price as close to perfect as is possible. In other words, all the information that is known about what the stock price should be is incorporated into the market price because someone out there incorporates it. And so it's not possible for anyone to be smarter than the market. It's not possible for you to outthink the market because the market is the product of everybody's thinking. So the market is smarter than you, and you cannot beat the market in setting the price. So you're fooling yourself if you think you know better than the market price. Well, if that's true, then there's no such thing as overvaluation. How can you say stocks are overvalued if the market priced them at the price they're at and the market is always the smartest at setting the price? Who are you to say they're overvalued? The idea of overvaluation is it's a logical impossibility in a world in which passive investing makes sense. So we should stop talking. If we're going to believe in passive investing, we should stop talking about overvaluation. It just doesn't, it doesn't exist. I was tempted to say it's a myth, but that'll bring me to my second simple test. I think I have 10 of them. The second test is Rob Arnott. I'm going to quote this all the time. I've quoted it several times in recent podcasts, but I think it's so wonderful. Rob Arnott, very smart guy, one of the most respected guys in the field. He was the editor of the Financial Analyst Journal, I believe, for 4 years. And I view the Financial Analyst Journal as the most prestigious journal in the field. Rob Arnott said recently that the conventional investing wisdom of the last 30 years is the product of myth and urban legend. Now, what would possess somebody like Rob Arnott to say such a thing? He didn't say, I think there's might be a couple little problems with passive investing. He didn't say that. He said it's the product of myth and urban legend. Do you see how dramatic a statement he's making? That statement should have been on the front page of the Wall Street Journal the next morning. It should have been on the cover of Money Magazine the following month. And they should have said, our next 10 issues are going to be devoted to the topic of, is Rob Arnott right or wrong? And we're going to get to the bottom of this one, friends. We're not going to stop. We're going to turn over every stone and find out either Rob Arnott is insane, like some people say Rob Bennett is, or he's right. If he's insane, well, fine. But we should let people know that, because a lot of people are listening to his advice. He's the top of the field. He's, you know, was editor of Financial Analyst Journal. You know, we need to, if he is insane, we need to take some action here. But if he's not insane, all of us promoting passive investing need to stop doing it. Rob Arnott's obviously persuaded. Now, you know, he's not some guy who went out in a boat and came back and said, the earth is not flat. He's Christopher Columbus. He's telling us the earth is not flat. Passive doesn't work. Myth and urban legend. That's what he said. That's as strong as anything Rob Bennett's ever said. And it's not Rob Bennett saying it. It's a guy, you know, with a lot more behind his name than mine. So, think about that. And, you know, if you don't believe he said it, Google it. It was Index Universe, an article he wrote at Index Universe where he said it. So, if he said that, I think you have a responsibility. If you're investing your retirement money according to passive investing principles, you have a responsibility to yourself to figure out what the heck was Rob Arnott talking about when he said that. That's scary stuff if you believe in passive investing. If you're following passive investing with your retirement money, heavens, just, oh. That alone proves the case as far as I'm concerned. It doesn't prove it 100%, but it proves that you've got to investigate it. It proves that we need a national debate on whether passive investing stands up to scrutiny or not. Just the fact that one guy with the weight of Rob Arnott would say such a strong statement proves we need to have a debate on this. And right now we're not having it. A third one that's sends chills down my spine. Robert Shiller, the author of Irrational Exuberance, Yale professor, said a couple weeks ago in an article, it was linked at the Today's Passion feature at my website, Robert Shiller said that he was intimidated. He was afraid to say all he knew about stock investing. You see, this is why we don't know today. The evidence that passive investing doesn't work has been around for 30 years, the academic research, but everyone's afraid to talk about it because you're driven out of the field if you tell. And Robert Shiller, he has tenure, and tenure at Yale, and he's got a best-selling book behind him, and he's been researching this his whole life, and he said he was afraid to tell all he knew. Well, if he's afraid to tell all he knew, guess how many others are afraid to tell all they know? Everybody is. Everybody is. That doesn't mean they all know everything. But John Bogle knows there are problems. Bill Bernstein knows there are problems. Scott Burns knows there are problems. Jonathan Clements knows there are problems. They're all afraid to come public. Maybe they're not sure. But that doesn't mean they shouldn't come forward and at least say, look, I'm starting to have doubts. I think we need a national debate. Once we have the national debate, well, we'll figure it out. You know, we're smart people. We can figure this out. But we can't figure it out if we don't have the debate. And we're never going to have the debate so long as people are afraid to speak up. And if Robert Shiller's afraid to speak up, everybody's afraid to speak up. Now, thank God, after the stock crash, some people are working up a little more courage. But we've got to start moving ahead at a faster pace, or we're all going to look like fools believing in the flat earth. 30 years after it was proven that the earth is round. Do you want to be a flat earther? I don't think the worst of the goons wants to be a flat earther. But that's essentially what we all are today. If we don't explore this question. A fourth simple test. I have to be brief on this because I'm running out of time, but This point by Larry Swedrow, it amazed me one time on a discussion board. Larry Swedrow is a financial planner with lots of books. And Larry believes that valuations affect long-term returns. But he believes in the passive investing model. So I asked him, you know, why should anybody be invested in stocks heavily in January of 2000 when stocks were the highest valuations ever and the long-term return was the lowest ever? And he said, and he used the logic of passive investing to make this argument. Absolutely. He went by what's in the books. He said, if the long-term return was low, that means the risk of stocks must have been very low, because returns are correlated with risk under this theory. So what Larry was saying is, in January of 2000, stocks were the least risky they have ever been in history. Do you believe that? If you don't believe that, then you should understand there's grave problems with this passive investing model. Grave inconsistencies. Why all the anger and hate? There's a couple articles at the website. You can find them. Go to the Bandit Motley Fool section. I catalog. I try not to spend too much time on this because it's ugly stuff, but I catalog it because people need to see it. Anger and hate have been the principal tactics used by the passive investing dogmatists to shut down discussions. Why? Why do they feel such anger and hate when people point out the contradictions in the passive investing model? That's not a sign of confidence, is it? That should tell you something. We haven't seen a little bit of anger and hate. We've seen big bunches of it. That should tell you something very disturbing about this model. The bans on honest posting. How many discussion boards have banned honest posting? I've never put forward an abusive post in my life. And I'm banned. I don't know how many, you lost track of how many boards. Let's say 8 or 10, I don't know. How can somebody be banned at 8 or 10 boards, never have posted never put up an abusive post in his life? I'm the leading figure in our community arguing against abusive posting. How could that happen? That could only happen if a model had become incredibly popular that was also incredibly flawed. There's no other way it could have happened. It's just not possible. Look at the contradictions in Bogle's thinking. I'm going to do an article at the website when I get time pointing out just different statements from John Bogle and how he contradicts himself all the time. Why? He contradicts himself because he's too smart not to see the flaws in the passive investing model, and yet he desperately wants to continue to believe in this model and to recommend it. And it forces him into contradictions. There's an entire thread just in the last couple of weeks at Vanguard Diehards where people are, there must be 150 posts on this thread. They go back and forth and back and forth. What does Bogle mean? When he's always warning people about overvaluation, he says, it's overvalued. You need to take these warnings into account. And people say, what does he mean? Does he mean lower our stock allocation? Nobody can figure it out what he means. It goes back and forth and back and forth. Why? Because Bogle can't say the words lower your allocation, because if he does, he's arguing against passive investing, and he's Mr. Passive Investor. But his conscience is telling him, I've got to warn these people, they're going to get killed. He's giving these warnings before the stock crash. But many people didn't lower their stock allocations because they believed in the passive investing gibberish. Well, when somebody as smart as John Bogle engages in as many contradictions as he does, The something that is up is we're all trying to believe in the flat earth a couple years longer, and we can't make sense of it anymore. It's driving us crazy. The historical data is one of the points. Just look at the historical data and you'll see it. Look at the historical data. You can get it all at Shiller's site. Go through year by year and just make a prediction yourself. Say, what do I think would happen in 10 years, given how high the PE10 level is? And you won't get it exactly right because you can't, but you will know whether you're going to get a good return, a bad return, or an okay return. And you'll be able to do that with a high level of accuracy, not if you only go 1 year out. But if you go 10 years out, you'll be able to do it. And that tells you something. It tells you that valuations do affect long-term returns. What people should do is look at the studies. Go to a passive investor and ask him, a passive investor, investing advocate, and ask him, why do you believe in this? And undoubtedly, they're going to tell you there are studies showing the timing doesn't work. Ask to look at the study. Don't just take his word there are studies. Look at it and look at the methodology and look. Did they check whether it was possible to time long-term or only short-term? And what you will find is every single study that's been put out looks at the short-term. It says if you change your allocation because valuations are too high, in 6 months, there's a good chance it won't have paid off. And that's absolutely true. But that doesn't tell you a thing about long-term timing. Changing your allocation and waiting 5 years or 10 years for it to pay off, That always works. You can find that out by using the calculators on my website. Long-term timing always works, and passive investing says that no form of timing works. So passive investing falls. Why should the price crash have been so bad? Why should the price crash have been so bad? The passive investors say that the market always sets the price properly. Well, was the market setting the price properly in August of 2008 before the crash? And it's also setting the price properly today at a figure $9 trillion less? Is that possible? That they could both be right? It's just not possible. Even John Bogle admits this. It's not possible. That fact alone shows that passive investing does not add up. The last point, the efficient market theory says that investors look at all factors. They look at all factors and set the market price. Are we looking at valuations? The passive investing model tells us not to change our allocation based on valuations. How can both things be true? How can the market be efficient and passive investing also be popular? If passive investing is popular, people are not changing their allocations based on valuations. So how could the market price possibly be right? We're not looking at all factors. If passive investing were not being promoted, maybe we would be. But passive investing is incredibly popular today. People don't think it's a good idea to change their allocations. Well, if people don't think it's a good idea to change their allocations based on valuations, they're not taking any practical action in response to changes in valuations. So how can we say that we're taking all factors into account? How many today even know that all of the studies backing up passive investing look at short-term timing? How many people even know that? See, that's the explanation of how we all fell for this flat earth idea. We all just heard other people tell us what other people told them. Everybody said there's studies showing the timing doesn't work. But how many ever looked at the studies and took note that all they look at is one form of timing short-term? And how many then bothered to go to the data and check whether long-term timing works and found, lo and behold, long-term timing always works, just as your common sense tells you it must. What's going on is there's a huge power to marketing. I think there was a time when people legitimately believed, and believed with confidence. But then what happens is there was an industry that developed, the financial planning industry, at the same time passive investing was becoming popular, and they put hundreds of millions of dollars into marketing this idea. And marketing affects people. It affects people's beliefs. That's why we engage in marketing. Well, once people believed and invested according to it, it was darn hard to go back and say, we might have been wrong. That's the reason why people believed in the flat earth for as long as they did. And that's the reason people believed man can't fly for as long as they did. People don't like to admit they're wrong. And when you spend hundreds of millions of dollars telling people how to invest their money and you're wrong, it's real hard to reverse course. That's why we believe in this crazy passive investing idea, because of the marketing that was, I think when the money was put in, it was perfectly for legitimate reasons. But the trouble is, once you take that step, it becomes very hard to reverse it. There's great power in marketing. And there's a great institutional force in play here. And that's what I think was going on at the Money Blog Network. Those bloggers, I don't think they ever looked at the studies. I don't believe any of them. The ones that were upset. I don't believe, and the ones that deleted the thread, I don't believe they ever looked at the studies. They believe in passive investing, but they never looked at the studies. And they were okay with running a blog entry against passive investing. And that's to their credit. That's good. That's good. They were okay with that because they believe in free speech. But when it came, but when I started talking about, we should organize to stop the goons, they were saying, well, wait, I think what clicked in their head is, wait a minute, if the goons really did this stuff, and there seems to be lots of evidence they did, it's all, you know, it's all documented, we really should take action. But they don't want to do it because they endorsed passive investing themselves. And they did it without ever checking the studies. And now they feel, on some level of consciousness, they feel foolish. They feel, why did I buy into that? That was a mistake. But they don't want to, they don't want to let that part of their consciousness go to the front. They want to keep that buried. And that's why bear markets take so long. There are all these institutional pressures where instead of acknowledging mistakes and moving forward, we bury our mistakes and thereby perpetuate our mistakes. And so what they said is, yeah, we'll allow a blog entry here and there, but we're not gonna, you know, openly acknowledge that we got things wrong. We don't want to have to rewrite 100 blog posts, and we certainly don't want to embarrass our friends. A lot of our friends endorse passive investing, and I don't want to embarrass anybody, and I don't want to force anybody to rewrite anything, but I do want people to know the realities. And the reality here is, you know, one of the realities for bloggers is there's a great opportunity here. Think of all we can learn in this national debate about how to invest. You know, it's unlimited. People never see that unless they get to the point where they're willing to admit that the earth is not flat. You have to entertain the idea that the earth is round before you start to discover all the benefits that follow from knowing that. There are huge benefits that followed from us learning that the earth is round and not flat, you know, in terms of exploring the globe and, you know, space travel and science and a million other things. But that all came from admitting a mistake. And so admitting mistakes can have great opportunity wrapped up in them. But it's hard. It's hard. That's the hurdle we have to get over. We have to get over that hurdle of admitting the mistake. And so we have to deal today with these institutional forces where you know, everybody's got friends, all these blog owners, they rose to prominence because of their relationships with people who advocate passive investing and who did it in good conscience, but who, it turns out, got it wrong. And you hear these comments, you know, underneath, you know, sort of between the lines, you know, who does Rob Bennett think he is telling us this? You know, what are you, some big shot? I didn't mean to be a big shot, but I saw what I saw, and I'm here to report it. And if somebody can show me to be wrong, I'm happy to be told I'm wrong. But I think I have the same right to make the case that any of the passive investing advocates have. So my point here is, I want to make the strongest case that I can make that passive investing is wrong. I don't want to soft soap it. I don't want to say, oh, I think there's a couple little things wrong. Some people do that. Some of the experts do that. No, I want to lay the cards on the table, partly because I want to state it as strongly as I believe it is, because then I want to be challenged. I want to be challenged. If someone can show me where I got something wrong, I want to hear about it because I want to fix it. I want to learn myself. But if no one can show me any evidence that passive investing is right, I want to see a national debate start where we discuss the transition to the new model, because I think we need to see that. And, you know, just to wrap it up in a little package, how is it that we all believe something for which there is no evidence? I think it was just a mistake. People did research that was very exciting, showing that short-term timing doesn't work, and some people jumped to the conclusion that that applied to long-term timing as well. And that just got us off to the races. And the weird thing about stock investing is that you can have long periods of time where a strategy that doesn't generally work will work. Because from 1975 through 2000, being heavily invested in stocks paid off well. From 1975 to 1995, rational investors were heavily invested in stocks. So there was no conflict. It wasn't that passive investing was right and rational was wrong. They both said to be heavily invested. It's only from 95 to 2000 in which passive was superior. And that was just a time of greater rationality. It was a quirk. you know, may not happen again for a long, long time. And the price you'll pay for believing in passive investing because of what happened during those 5 years is going to be a horrible price, I believe. But it's hard for human beings to look at what happened from 75 through 2000 and believe that the whole thing was a mistake. And the whole thing wasn't really a mistake, but the explanation that we came to believe in, that passive investing was responsible for that, that was a mistake. What was responsible for the first 20 years of that 25-year time period was just that stocks are in general a great long-term asset class. It has nothing to do with passive investing. The last 5 years, it was due to passive investing, and it was just a quirk. It was just an out-of-control bull market. It was irrational. And an irrational strategy worked for those 5 years, but it's probably not going to work again, possibly for decades. And you need to be learning about the rational strategies for the remaining time, and the rational strategies can help you to make up the money you lost following passive in the stock crash. So, my belief, I want to be clear, is that I believe the passive investors are the equivalent today of the Flat Earth Society. I say that meaning no insult. I say it because I believe it, and I understand they're smart people. I think all those people who believed in the Flat Earth Society in 400 BC, I think they were smart too. I think there comes a time when smart people have to abandon ideas that have failed. And I think passive investing has failed. But I don't want to win through some bullying tactics. I want to win a debate on the merits. And if anyone can come up with any rational, reasonable, civil arguments for passive investing, I would very much like to hear them. If not, I would like to see us all proceed to a national debate on whether passive investing stands or passive investing falls and is replaced by the new rational investing model, which says you must change your stock allocation when prices go to insanely dangerous levels. If you have one of those arguments for passive investing that stands up, please let me know. Send an email using the button at the left-hand side of every page at passionsaving.com. Good luck with your investing strategies.